Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Unmotivated Habits Podcast. Today's guest is Johnny Crowder, and Johnny's an awesome guy. He is a suicide and abuse survivor, a TEDx speaker, a touring musician, a mental health and sobriety advocate, and he's the founder and CEO of Cope Notes, which we will talk about in the episode. We'll talk about all of it, but before we get into it, I'd like to encourage everyone listening to just pause this, go to YouTube and type in Johnny Crowder TED Talk, because it's really great and you'll have a better understanding of who Johnny is before we even start this. So if you have time, go check it out. If not, go check it out after this episode, but I would definitely encourage you to do so. And without further ado, enjoy the episode. All right. So Johnny, thank you so much for coming on. I was excited to have you on when you reached out, and then I watched your TED Talk and I was like more excited. I thought, this guy is so in line with everything I'm trying to do here. It's perfect. And you mentioned that in your message. And typically I have, you know, 3 pages of notes for whatever guest is going to come on, but I hope you don't mind. For this one, I was like, you know what? Scrap the notes that I had. I just want to have a chat. And yeah, I hope that's okay.
Definitely. I couldn't even believe when I saw your podcast. I'm like, this guy understands. Because I'm sure that you know that most people are looking for that silver bullet when it comes to whatever problem they're facing. And I think there's an ever-growing percentage of the population that's starting to sort of wake up from that daze and go, wait, yeah, I don't know if it's that easy. Maybe we've been misunderstanding this.
Yeah, exactly. And for people listening, I'm talking about the whole incremental growth idea and incremental improvement. And from your perspective, can you tell everyone kind of how you got there, a little bit of your background? I know it's a long story, but just like an abbreviated version, I guess, of how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah. So I always tell people, if you want the full unedited version, you can watch my TED Talk. Just search Johnny Crowder on YouTube and I think it should pop up. But the short version is, I grew up in an abusive household and was diagnosed with a number of mental health conditions at a very early age. And I started treatment in high school. I made several unsuccessful attempts at taking my own life. So I'm very fortunate to still be alive today. And I went to school for psych. I started doing peer support and public advocacy through NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, back in 2011. So I went from being someone who was crippled by my diagnoses to someone who wanted to serve people who were being crippled by their diagnoses to now, today, someone who's trying to change the conversation around mental health as a whole. So I went from, it's only people like me, to it's only people like us, to this is an everybody conversation.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. It is most certainly everyone, even if they don't realize it. When was that? I'm trying to say, the whole point is that there is no aha moment. You just need to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And you need to start somewhere, be easy on yourself, realize it's it's life. It's not, you're not trying to improve by a certain date. You're not trying to get better and like, I'm going to be okay by this time in a year from now. It's a forever thing. It's a constant battle against, you know, everything external, and it's constant growth. But when did that journey start for you? When did that, you know, journey of, okay, now I'm going to start turning things around, when did that begin for you?
Well, I mean, like I say in the TED Talk, I don't really have like a turning point, like a defining moment, but I can think of some things that stand out to me when I look back on my life. And this is not when I started working on myself, but this was definitely something that made me consider reframing my understanding of my thinking and feelings and behavior. I was dating this girl at the time who was freaking awesome to me. She was like literally reading about my diagnoses to try to be a supportive girlfriend. Like, I've never heard of anybody doing that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And yeah, she was She was nothing but sweet to me. And there was a point where we got back to my house after we went out to dinner or something. And I was like saying goodnight and she was about to drive away. And then she started crying. I was like, yo, what the heck is happening? Like, we had a great dinner and we've, you know, no sign of anything wrong. And here you are crying when we said goodbye. Like, what's going on? And she said, well, it's just scary to leave and it's difficult to date someone when you don't know if they're going to be alive the next day because they might take their own life. And what I kind of realized in that moment is for a long time, I thought my self-harm only affects me. My disordered eating only affects me. My suicidal ideation only affects me. And when I realized that those things were also affecting the only person who was trying to help me, I was like, wait a second, that's my team. You're not allowed to touch her. She's like in my corner.
Yeah.
I think that was something that helped me understand something that I didn't understand even when I started working on my mental health, which is no one exists in a vacuum. The things that you do and think and feel affect other people, whether they tell you or not, because if she never brought it up, I never would have known.
How about that? Like, that is a great realization to come to, that the self-harm you're doing is affecting the people around you. And that's something that, from an addiction standpoint, from a self-harm standpoint, most people in those situations never come to that realization. Having family members who have had addiction problems, people have passed away, friends who have died to suicide, everyone seems to have been touched by it at this point, in America especially. Is there that brings me into Cope Notes. I wanted to talk about that because I think I've been looking into it and it's such an amazing idea. And if you go to your TED Talk and scroll down to the comments, it's just so many people saying, you're the reason they're okay. You're the reason they're still here. Mm-hmm. For the people, I know there's people listening who have these issues. Can you talk about Cope Notes a little bit?
Yeah, Cope Notes. So I'm going to do the long version, short version thing. If you want all the nitty gritty details, you can go to copenotes.com and there's plenty of information on there about what we do.
Sure.
But the short explanation is we use daily text messages to help improve mental and emotional health. So we wanted to identify all the barriers to care. Like, you know, for me, when I was in treatment, I was like, well, I sure as heck don't have money to see a therapist every week. I don't know what my schedule is going to look like because I would tour and play concerts and stuff and I would never know where I would be. So I'm like, I can't commit to a schedule when I don't know what my schedule will look like. I don't want my personal information being used by an app, like being sold to advertisers and stuff. So I had all of these different concerns about mental health resources. And then I looked around for things that could check off all those boxes and I couldn't find one. So Cope Notes was designed to not only address all of those issues, but basically remove the barriers to care for people living with or without diagnoses to improve their mental and emotional health. And for this to actually reach out to people. So instead of doing one big thing every week or month that you have to muster up all the attention and courage and you have to write it into your planner, this is 30 seconds or a minute every day at a random time. And the cumulative effect of that incremental growth that you're talking about is your brain learns to think in healthier patterns over time. So it's a brain training tool that is all via text, and it requires so incredibly little of your time and attention to make a huge impact over the course of months or years.
That's the whole thing, is to make these little changes that don't require massive effort, because that's how it's sustainable. I know in the TED Talk you mentioned that, and it's something I've come to realize, that different, if you're trying to form a habit, there's no magic number. There's no 21 days, there's no 37 days. You said sometimes the studies have shown it can take up to 254 days to form a habit.
Consecutive days.
You can't miss a day in there.
Yeah. It's, and like, what?
That's incredible. And I believe it from experience. I truly believe it. So to have something that requires such little effort it's massive. It's a really big deal.
I had a mentor say to me a couple of years ago, you always want to make it easy to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You want to make it easy for people to do the right thing for themselves and others. And I was like, how do we make it easy for people to prioritize their mental and emotional health? Like we're wearing down that stigma. We're helping people better understand what they're feeling, what they're going through, and helping people manage it without requiring a ton of money, a ton of time, a ton of commitment, a ton of personal data.
Yeah.
And I think Cope Notes is essentially, it's the tool that I wish I could have been using, like all the way through middle school, high school, college, into adulthood. And I just never found something that could be consistent for me. Because I can't do crap 254 days in a row. I can't. I'm going to skip a day on accident at some point.
Yeah, yeah. And when it comes to forming good habits, having those achievable goals is important. But it's even more important when it's eliminating bad habits and rewiring the brain for bad habits. Because a lot of times that's kind of the goal we're going for. And those are the people we're reaching out to.
Yeah. Dude, replacement is crucial. Anyone who's ever had to like quit smoking or drinking or anything like that, I have a lot of buddies who have quit cigarettes by replacement. They will just replace smoking a cigarette with, I had one buddy who would, instead of every time he wanted to smoke a cigarette, he would watch a music video.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Eventually that wasn't the only thing he did, but it helped him because instead of A, you choose B. And that's kind of what Cope Notes is trying to do. Like instead of choosing a negative thought pattern that's comfortable, you start choosing a positive thought pattern that might not feel comfortable now, but over time will feel second nature.
Yeah. And I've heard people negatively criticize people who have replaced a bad habit and then become gym rats or something like that. And they say, but you just replace one addiction for another. And the answer is it's okay to get addicted to something good. I think that it's at least an improvement to replace something bad with something that's better. And if the underlying problem is something different, at least in the meantime, you're doing something good with that personality trait that you're working with.
Yeah. One of my, the girlfriend that I was mentioning earlier, we're no longer together. Spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. that was years ago, and she was in NA, and a lot of the folks in NA would switch to, or at least in her group, had switched from narcotics to maybe alcohol, and then they would do AA, and then they would switch from alcohol to cigarettes, and then when they tried to quit cigarettes, they would go from cigarettes to coffee or energy drinks, and when I had this, I had a real long talk with her because I'd attended NA with her a couple times. Mm-hmm. And what we talked about was you never want the thing that you replace something else with to be the thing forever.
Yeah.
Like if you get addicted to exercise, like I have been in the past, I exhibited, I had very serious issues with bulimia and anorexia. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see them as issues because I'm like, oh, I'm being healthy and I'm working out so much. And it was really, really physically dangerous. And all I can think of is it's more about your relationship with something than it is what the thing is. So if you drink too much water, you can die. Mm-hmm. Like moderation is key, whether it's something that's terrible for you, or great for you, obviously. You want to switch from a terrible thing to a not terrible thing, but the very next step is repairing your relationship with what that better thing is.
Exactly. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's the key is fixing that relationship. That's right. From a personal, it is related. How long have you been doing Cope Notes full time?
So I started Cope Notes when I worked at an ad agency, and I figured, oh, I'll do it like after work and on the weekends and on my lunch break. Mm-hmm. Little did I know how much freaking work it is to start a healthcare tech company.
Yeah.
So this was maybe like 5 months into Cope Notes. I full on quit my job to run it full time. And so I've been full time on Cope Notes, and I don't mean full time like quote unquote, like making Instagram videos saying like hashtag grind,
rise
and grind, gotta hustle. Exactly. I mean minimum 40, 50, 60 hours a week for the last several years. So I quit my job July of 2018. So it's been almost 2.5 years of full-time work on it.
So can you talk a little bit about making that jump? Was it super scary? And how has that affected your entire life and your whole philosophy? How has that affected it?
Yeah, I wish to God I could tell the story. Like, I just walked out of that agency and I said, I'm going to build my own career. And then I woke up the next day and got to work. It was like, I went through this period of existential crisis for sure, where I'm like, I'm such an idiot. Like, I don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars, which most tech companies, you know, many successful tech companies have started with a big pocket of cash.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I didn't have a source of income. And for a lot of people listening, they might be surprised to know that I still, to this day, as of this recording, do not have a source of income. Mm-hmm. Because all of the money that we've made as a company have gone into hiring a team, paying for more back-end services. Like, we have a lot of expenses. And I've put everything we've made back into the company. And the strain that that has put on my life is unimaginable, not having a source of income for years at a time. But I'll say this. This was maybe a year and a half ago. No, it was early 2019 or early mid 2019. I was in a near plane accident. The plane landed and I am fine. But it was a, there was a period of maybe 20 minutes where everyone was relatively certain that the plane was going down. Mm-hmm. And I had to do this like life inventory. I had to be like, wow, I'm 26 years old and I'm going to die. I'm going to die at 26 years old. I never got a chance. I've never been to Europe. I didn't ever get married or have kids. And I thought that that's what I would think, right? Like, you think if you were faced with death, you would take an inventory like that of all the things you've never done.
Yeah.
But in that moment, my inventory was more like this. If I die, my guitarist can carry my band forward. So he has all of our lyrics and demos and everything. So he can find somebody else. So the band will be fine and it can still serve people in that way. Mm-hmm. Cope Notes, Matt, my CTO, has all of our passwords somewhere. I'm sure he can prove legally in court that he would be the successor or something if anything happens to me. So we're not going to get locked out of accounts or anything. I'm sure you can figure it out. So that's fine. And then I was like, okie dokie.
Yeah.
That's it. And I realized in my inventory, I never said, oh, what about, I never got to make a ton of money, or I never got to live in a mansion, or I only cared about those two projects. And when I survived that, I realized I don't care how long it takes for me to be able to provide for myself and live comfortably through serving other people. I've been volunteering since I was in elementary school, mm-hmm. and there's nothing more important that you can do with your life than serving other people. And I didn't really know that I felt that way until I almost died and didn't even think about money once.
That's what it took. It took that near-death experience to realize that.
Yeah.
And do you think that that mindset and that kind of sense of calm you felt in that moment when you wouldn't have thought that's what you're feeling, that's got to be a result of all the work you've done and all the personal work you've done.
Dude, I think everything is connected. Like, I have a lot of folks ask me, you know, what does your mental health recovery look like in your day-to-day life?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't even know how to answer that question, because the way I brush my teeth, the way I sit down, the way I put on my deodorant, everything that I do, from the mundane to the extraordinary, it's all related to recovery. And I think that little pockets of peace like that I find are for sure a result of billions upon billions of tiny micro decisions that I try to make to better my mental and emotional health.
Yeah, definitely. Undoubtedly. And that brings another question I didn't think of till just now, but does any sort of spirituality play a part in your recovery and your life?
Yeah, so I am the most surprised person in the world that I am now a Jesus follower. I grew up in an environment that made me just totally write off the concept of God. I toured in a black and death metal band for years. We had pentagrams all over everything. And
yeah,
it took me a long time to finally look at Jesus with an open mind. And I'm still fairly new to the whole Jesus thing. I'm like six-ish years in. And learning about Jesus has changed so much of my life. It's made me... I used to think that tolerating people was noble.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, no, I love everybody. Even the people who totally screw me over, I can't not love them. And that's not a product of me being a good person. That's what happens when you find out what Jesus did for you.
Exactly. And I've had there's a minister I've had on here a couple times just because we've had such good conversations, and he's a really great guy. And I told him my stance. Like, I don't consider myself a Christian. I don't consider myself religious, but I love reading the New Testament. And I love the story of Jesus. And I say, it makes, like you said, it makes everything easy, because anything you're faced with, there's not a decision to be made. You know the right thing to do. It just makes life easier, because you don't have to decide, like, what's the right thing to do in this situation, or what should I do? If you're living that lifestyle, you already know the right thing to do. There's no question about it.
I think so. I am with you on part of it. I also think Christianity has really complicated my life, because before, you kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then when you are, it's like ignorance is bliss. Like, before I knew what had been given to me through Jesus, I was like, psh, you know, whatever I want to do is fine. And then when you learn what you've received, you're like, how can I be an incredible, generous steward of what I've been given? And all of a sudden your scope goes from mostly you, and then you patting yourself on the back to think that you're for tolerating other people, to being like, how do I leverage what I've been given for the good of everyone around me? So your plate gets a lot bigger. You're like, oh man, I have a responsibility and an opportunity to leverage my position for everyone I meet.
Yeah. How about from the perspective of, say, finding silver linings, knowing that, you know, even if something bad happens, you know, it's working towards a greater good. Has that been helpful, that way of thinking when it comes to Christianity?
Yeah. So I'll just share this. This was something that happened last night, like less than 24 hours ago. Mm-hmm. I had a call with a label and we were talking about my band.
Yeah.
And we basically had a conversation where we were talking about when we come back and start playing shows again, will we want to team up? And we were talking about a lot of the band's dreams. And at the same time, we were talking to, not too long ago, a company that was interested in buying Cope Notes. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of was thinking about the timeline of if Cope Notes was acquired by like some health company where they could administer Cope Notes to like millions of people. And then right after that happened, then I would be able to tour. I would actually have the bandwidth to tour full time again,
because
I wouldn't be running a company.
Yeah.
And it's like it would be a dream come true to actually come back to playing live music full time, because I miss it. If listeners don't have friends in the music industry, you might not be aware of how difficult this year has been to not even have an industry. Mm-hmm. And the idea of being able to come back and do it in that order, like to be able to put my company in good hands, hypothetically, this is all like hypothetical, to put my company in good hands and then be able to do music full time again brought me so much joy. It's like my ideal rest of my life.
Yeah.
And like my ideal 30s. And I realized the only reason that that could happen, if it does, is because of all of the no's, quote unquote, that we've received so far. Like doors being slammed in our face, people going back on their promises. All of those things are leading to something wonderful, whether it is what I just described or something completely different. And what I need people to understand who are listening is the Bible doesn't say that when bad things happen, that it's actually a good thing in disguise. The Bible does not say that. And I don't think that was the point that Jesus was ever trying to make. I think the point is when bad things happen, God can leverage the outcomes to provide a landscape in which positive things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my biggest mistake in the past has been experiencing something crappy and then going, why can't I see how this is a blessing? And it's like, dude, because it sucks. Like, you got fired. There's
no one's saying it doesn't suck.
Something good could come from this, but it's not a net good that you got fired. It's okay to be frustrated.
And it allows you to look back and eventually be thankful that it happened because of where you are.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you brought up a couple points that are relevant to today and things that are happening right now. It seems like a lot of the country might be going back into some sort of lockdown situation. I know the whole COVID pandemic was especially hard for people with addiction problems and drugs and alcohol. And with isolation, I assume you've experienced the same things a lot of us have. Has 2020 been especially difficult in any ways for you? And have you had people reaching out saying it's been especially difficult in those ways?
Yeah, pretty much everyone I know, save for maybe one or two unicorns, have definitely had a harder time this year with everything. Even like basic daily tasks or like maintaining their workflow or work-life balance or keeping conversations going with friends that they don't see often. Mm-hmm. For myself, I actually started therapy again at the beginning of this year, like spring, because I'd done treatment for like 10 years and I'd been out for maybe the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And like weaned off medication, wasn't seeing a counselor. And then when this year started, I realized, oh, wait a second. If I don't have concerts and I can't play basketball and I can't go to church and I can't see my friends. And I made this list and I was like, all my coping mechanisms were just wiped out from under me.
Yeah.
I need to change something. And this year has been absolutely crushing in so many ways. But in this moment, as of this recording, I am feeling very hopeful for what can come from this. And I do not view COVID as a net positive. I am not happy that it is happening. I am not happy that people are losing their jobs and their passions. I am hopeful that some sort of good fruit can come from this in the way that people treat other people, in the way that we prioritize our time, and the way that we choose our careers. I'm hoping that this is an opportunity for sort of a forced upgrade in certain areas of our life, but only time will tell. And we just have to be open and have the intention to be like, okay, if things are going to change right now, I didn't decide they were going to change, but if they have to, maybe I can play a role in whether they change for the better or the worse.
Perfectly said. And time will tell what good's going to come of it. I agree. It's not a net positive, but eventually some good will come of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're short on time. I want you to let everyone know where they can find you personally, Cope Notes, your band, and anything else you want to share with everyone.
Yeah. So I'll do a couple plugs and then I'll give like a last little nugget of
perfect
what will hopefully come off as wisdom. We shall see. If you want to learn about Cope Notes, go to copenotes.com. We have freaking everything on there. There's subscriptions. Obviously, you can get a subscription for yourself or a friend or family member. We also work with organizations or businesses or schools. So if you have a big old group, recently an Ultimate Frisbee team hit us up. So if you have some sort of group, we'll work out a deal with you. And then there's also a link to our podcast on that page. It's called the Copeman's Podcast. I'm trying to think. Prison, my band, is on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, wherever you get your music. And I am on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. My Instagram is at Johnny Crowder Loves You. Nice. And that's basically it. The last thing that I just want to end on is, I know that there are people listening who are frustrated with how long their progress is taking. I mean, that's probably why a lot of people listen to the show, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Why the heck is this? Why can't I change immediately? What is taking me so long? And then we think these thoughts like, am I stupid? Do I not care? Am I not committing myself enough? And we start really just laying into ourselves in a way that we would never speak to a friend or family member. So what I want to do is kind of two things. Number one, remind you that it is this difficult for almost everybody. So both of the people in this conversation right now, as well as every other listener, is having a difficult time bringing about positive change in their lives. That is the nature of this type of work. So it is not because you are stupid or ill-equipped or because you're not, you don't care. It's none of those things. It's because it's a hard thing to do. So please continue doing the work and don't beat yourself up. And the second thing is, don't say anything to or about yourself that you wouldn't say to or about your best friend in the whole world. And if you wouldn't say they're not, if you wouldn't look at a friend and say, well, you're obviously not progressing because you're stupid and you don't care, and you're really not equipped to bring about positive change. You would never say that, so don't you dare say it to yourself. That's kind of my true north with self-talk, is would I say this to my best friend in the whole world?
And let me add, if you would say that to your best friend in the whole world, don't say that to them.
Yeah, you need new friends for sure.
Perfect. Well, yeah, that's a perfect note to end on. I appreciate that. It was a nugget of wisdom. Anytime you want to come on the show, just reach out, let me know, because there's so much more we could talk about. We've barely scratched the surface of incremental change, and it's a great conversation, and you know, thanks again for coming on.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, brother.